Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fandamentals podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode to discuss News Radio, it's host of the Truly Happily Madison podcast, Jack Gregson. Jack was kind enough to come onto the show and share with me a bit of an underrated gem, really, of a sitcom, and that is, of course, News Radio. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like me, you might be thinking, what is News Radio? I can't say I've heard of it. Well, I was quite excited to learn all about it, and Jack was very kind to talk me through all the cast, the setup, some of the better jokes and characters. And I was pleasantly surprised with what I learned about this sitcom. And I have to say, since doing this edit, I've gone on, obviously looked up some clips to put in for you guys, watched a fair few episodes, and have really come to appreciate this show. It's one of those that has a very strong cast. It has a lot of great gags, both in sort of quick-witted commentary and lots of physical comedy. And of course, we get into all of that in our discussion and so much more. So without further ado, let's just get straight into the episode. This is News Radio with Jack Gregson. Hello, Jack, and welcome to the Fandamentals podcast.
Thank you for having me, Holly. It's exciting to be here.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on because you've picked one that is quite obscure, I think. And I think this is going to be a real education, not only for me, but hopefully for the people listening at home. And that is the sitcom News Radio. So I want to know, first of all, when did you see this and why have you decided to bring it to us today?
So I probably first saw News Radio when I was about 18. So that would have been about 9 or 10 years after it had gone off the air. And I think the thing that got me into this little obscure sitcom was, so I'm a massive comedy nerd. Really love a lot of varieties of comedy, be it good and bad. To hear more of the bad, please listen to my podcast, Truly Happily Madison. when I was sort of a younger guy, researching like comedians I like Ben Stiller or the cast and writers of The Simpsons, stuff like that, things that were influencing me in comedy at a young age, I noticed that you would see shows that I had never heard of pop up on their IMDb feed. So be it, you'd see stuff like Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared often pop up in these sort of IMDb filmographies. You'd see Arrested Development was one that popped up on a lot of IMDb filmographies. And I started watching these shows and I was like, oh, these are perfect for me. And News Radio was in there as well. You had people like David Cross was appearing on this show. And I was like, oh, I could never find a way to watch it as a kid until I was about 18. And the first two seasons popped up on the iTunes store when iTunes had sort of started launching that they were selling TV shows as well as music. So I immediately, they were $4.99 each, and I immediately bought the first two seasons because I was like, I need to watch News Radio. I need to find out what this is.
Right.
And I think from the first episode, I was just hooked. It's this very... It's an interesting form of sitcom. It's a sitcom. It's a form of sitcom that I think is mostly deceased, in that it's very low concept. It is just people working at a radio station, and yet it embraces slapstick and witty dialogue and forms. It reminds me sort of like an old 1930s screwball comedy at times in the way it handles its comedy and genre. It's very dear to my heart. It's not one that I think many people know about, though. If you talk them through again, like the cast and crew of this show, you'll suddenly, I think, you'll be perking people's interest. So I wanted to come on today to talk about what is, I wouldn't say it's my absolute favourite sitcom of all time, but it's one that is very dear to my heart and one that I'd love to shout about more.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That's a really insightful kind of introduction, and that's essentially what this show is all about. I mean, I've had all kinds of topics here prior to this sitcom series that I'm doing. You know, anything from kind of pinball to Godzilla, you know, it's, there's nothing too niche in that for me. But yeah, you're right. That was something that stood out to me when you and I were talking on Twitter and you threw this out there. I went and looked it up, looked up some of the clips and trailers and the cast. And yeah, it's absolutely spot on. I couldn't believe that this was something that slipped under the radar, because it's sort of, it's for anyone who doesn't know, it started in 90, I've got it here, it's from 95 to 99. So it's kind of peak, I would say, sitcom era for like the States. You know, like we've already done Seinfeld and Friends, you know, those were out and about,
and this was part of the NBC must-see TV lineup along with Friends and Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's what I learned, and I was like, right, okay. So but it's interesting that this doesn't get talked about as much, but you've got casts like David Foley, you know, Stephen Root, Andy Dick, Maura Tierney, Vicky Lewis, Joe Rogan, you may have heard of him in podcasting. Phil Hartman, who we'll get to, I'm sure, as we talk more about the characters. But for anyone who doesn't know him, you'll know him, or you may remember him as Troy McClure from The Simpsons, and Lionel Hutz, two of the greatest recurring Simpsons characters, I think, in the early days. So it's like, when I saw that, I thought, that's insane. Like, this is a crazy cast in sort of, like you said, the peak of NBC, you know, nighttime sitcoms, or primetime sitcom, I should say. So, yeah, I agree with you, man. This is one that's definitely piqued my interest, and along with Seinfeld, which... for people who've already listened, no, I haven't seen yet, but I'm going to get around to it. This is on my list of shows that, like, I need to go back and watch this now, because this looks brilliant. So,
definitely yeah, recommend Seinfeld as well.
Yeah.
Truly a wonderful show.
We had a wonderful chat about that. So I'd love to know, what's the sort of concept then and premise for anyone who perhaps, like myself, is unfamiliar with the show?
So the show all takes place at a New York news radio station. That's the title. the radio station WNYX. And in the pilot episode, we're introduced to Dave Nelson, who's played by Dave Foley, who is this sort of very young, up-and-coming radio sort of man working in the radio industry, has just been transferred there from a small station in Wisconsin. He arrives and meets the station owner, Jimmy James, who's played by Stephen Root, who's this eccentric billionaire character, which already is a fun character to have in your roster, is the eccentric billionaire. Less fun perhaps after who was just president, but
these were simpler times.
There is actually a whole episode where Jimmy James decides he's going to run for president, and someone says he'll never win, and then Phil Hartman turns around saying he's got $1 billion, of course he's going to win. And it's a horrible foreshadowing. So Jimmy James is far nicer person than Donald Trump ever was.
Right.
Apologies to all your Republican listeners. Dave is introduced to this Dave is a very sort of straight-laced kind of he's your straight man character for this show, though is still very funny within the show. He's introduced to this sort of madcap news team. You've got the host of the news show, Bill McNeil, played by Phil Hartman, who is this sort of very loud and arrogant type who is a force of nature to himself, and he's just awful to everybody in the office, but you kind of love him for it.
I could see him playing that kind of character very well. He always played kind of like smarmy guys. He's very good at that.
Completely. He's a real treasure. And I mean, sorry if I'm jumping around a little bit the show is sadly covered in a cloud of mourning, because Phil Hartman was sadly shot by his wife during the summer between season 4 and season 5, and sadly passed away. And just before we jumped on, I rewatched the first episode of season five, where it's just post his funeral, and it's very funny, but it's also very sad to watch, because you can see the tears in the actor's eyes while they're doing this scene. Apparently they had to stop filming several times because everybody just burst into tears.
I could see that, because I learned about his life on a show that keeps getting a shout out on here, and I'm putting it into the universe. I might get these guys on one day, but Do Go On, an Aussie podcast, do all sorts of reports and hit on history, and they did one on Phil Hartman. I was fascinated to learn about his life, and I didn't realize what had happened to him. And I know the Simpsons writers and directors said the same thing, of like, that they never got anyone to redo Troy McClure or Lionel Hutz. You'll notice in a certain point in the series, like, his character just disappears, and they never bring them back, because they were like, no, we can't touch it. The guy was too good, and it would be offensive to his legacy, and like you say, his tragic passing, to try and revoice the character or something like that. So I'm not surprised they gave him a proper send-off. I think that's really nice to know straight away.
Yeah, no, and he's so fantastic in the show, and it was a real shame. He was posthumously nominated at the Emmys for Best Supporting Actor. During that season. Sadly, he did not win, but David Hyde Pierce, who did win, gave him a very nice shout out when he went to pick up his statue. Sorry, I'm getting sad just talking about it.
I know. That's okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so we were also introduced to other characters such as Matthew, who's played by Andy Dick, who is this insanely talented, not talented in the characters and talented, but Andy Dick is very talented as playing this wonderfully slapstick character. I mean, one of the highlights, and it sounds so stupid to say it, but one of the highlights of the show is just watching each episode and wondering how Matthew is going to fall over this week. He does it so well, and they do very, very nice ways of building it up to, you think, oh, it's going to be this, and it's not that. It's very, they start realizing that they have a running joke, and they play with it very nicely. You also get Beth, who is the secretary, played by Vicky Lewis, who is this sort of 90s flirtatious character, but also sort of like a 90s hip girl. She's described as the cool one of the office. And she's a very fun character. Joe Gorelli, who is played by Joe Rogan, who is this unsurprisingly conspiracy theory toting handyman, he's very macho and loves conspiracy theories, and you can't,
I'm guessing they didn't have a lot of writing for him and his character. He probably just turned up and they were like, yeah, just whatever, say whatever you want.
It feels like it. And I do think that, I mean, what's interesting about this cast is that you look at where everybody has come from. So you've got Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall. You've got Phil Hartman from Saturday Night Live. You've got Andy Dick, fresh off of the Ben Stiller show. You've got Vicky Lewis is coming in from Broadway. Joe Rogan's coming in from stand-up. And Stephen Root has sort of had a little film career at this time. And I think this show is incredibly well cast in that they've been able to pick these people and highlight their comedic styles and make it all work for them in a certain way. It's true with Joe Rogan. It actually breaks my heart too that Joe Rogan is who he is now, because because he is really good in News Radio. And we Truly Happily Madison, we recently covered Zookeeper, where he pops up as the sort of villain of the film, or the romantic rival, and we were just like,
oh,
what is this? Okay. Well, he's not very good in it, but you know, more power to him, I suppose. We also have Catherine Duke is introduced, who is the co-anchor of the radio station with Bill. She's played by Candy Alexander, unfortunately, she does come across as the token black character within the show. She doesn't have so much of a comedic identity. She's very high strung, she's often hit upon by Joe Rogan's character, and a recurring joke is that she just slaps him around the face. And she leaves at the end of season four, and you kind of can understand why. However, there are great segments with her. There is a wonderful episode where the heating is broken within the studio, and everyone is sort of having fantasies, and she's sitting in the break room, and in comes another black guy. He's like, "Oh, do you mind if I join you for lunch?" And she's like, "Of course, Robert, come and join me." And he's like, "Oh," and then all these other minority characters start coming into the break room and joining her and sitting down, and someone goes, "Isn't it nice to have a bit of color in the workplace?" And everyone's like, "Yeah, yeah." And then she realizes that this is just her fantasy, and instead a white man walks in. He's like, "Hey, can I join you?" And she's like, "Oh, of course." And then suddenly all these white people come in, and she just looks sort of crestfallen. And then finally we have Lisa Miller, who is the who's played by Maura Tierney, who is sort of, she's a reporter and sort of wants to be the news director, which Dave is. However, she has a romantic relationship with Dave. It's one of the nice things about this show, and one of the things I think we can talk about more, is that they were they were not into doing the usual sitcom of the time. Mm-hmm. So instead of having a will they, won't they, like a Ross and Rachel on Friends, Dave and Lisa sleep together in the second episode, and sort of on again, off again throughout the whole thing. And it's never, you're never watching the show for the romance. But Maura Tierney and Dave Foley have fantastic chemistry and are wonderful playing off each other in a sort of His Girl Friday style. That is essentially the show. It is the wacky exploits of a crazy news team. Be it that their crazy owner is going to run for president, or that one day there is a man threatening to jump off the ledge of the building that they're in, or it one day that that Matthew's character becomes so obsessed with the comic strip Dilbert that he decides to quit his job when no one will listen to him about Dilbert, and they have to go and get him back. I mean, it's a strange show. It's a surreal show at times. I think it paves the way for stuff like Community to come along later, where it's a sitcom that kind of plays with sitcom tropes. They do two fantasy episodes. One is what if the news radio cast was on the Titanic? And one, what if instead of a news station, they were a space station?
Brilliant. Why not?
Why not? Yeah, it's great fun. It's really like when they've shown that they're not that interested in staying in a sort of reality. So why not play around a little bit? And I mean, the Titanic episode has a sort of poignance, because at the end, everyone passes away on the Titanic apart from Andy Dick and Phil Hartman. And that's Phil Hartman's final episode.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is, that's very poignant. But I kind of love that stuff. You know, so Community is one that is coming up actually on this. That's one I'm currently rewatching, and it's crazy as a show, but but it works. And it's lots of other shows that have done things like that, like you say, where they play with tropes a bit and they have fantasy sequences. Scrubs is another episode that I've done, and that has obviously a lot of dream sequences and fantasies in it, and it kind of plays with the surreal. So it's interesting to see that a show like this, sort of mid-90s, has come along and is already experimenting, it sounds like, with that kind of stuff at a time when the kind of bread and butter of your sitcoms, if you will, was very much just, you know, family or group of people getting up to little hijinks, which is great. And then some of those shows we've already talked about. But yeah, it just sounds interesting that it seems like this is somewhere in the middle where, like, they're already like, okay, this is already a bit of a tired thing now. There's already, you know, a bunch of other shows. Like you said, if you're sat down on whatever night it is that these shows are on. You're watching Friends, you're watching Seinfeld, you're watching Fresh Prince, you know, everyone loves Raymond, all these stuff. You get to news radio, it's like, I can imagine they're thinking, what can we do to keep the audience watching and not just kind of go, oh, this is another one of those, I'm done this for this evening.
Well, I think that's, it's interesting as well that the show was constantly on the brink of cancellation. Every season it was on the brink of cancellation. But I think there must be people at NBC who's like, who just like, there's something about this show. There's something that is drawing us back. And it's right. it's funny as well. Like they were very forward in how they wanted to be different. There was NBC ran a special night for Thursday 1 week where it was called Four Funerals and a Wedding.
Okay.
So they wanted, they had a lineup of five different shows and they wanted four episodes to be about funerals and one episode to be about a wedding. And I think Friends did the episode where Monica and Ross's grandma dies and they go to the funeral of that. And they asked News Radio to do a funeral episode. Now, like, well, we don't want to do this. So they did an episode in which someone catches a rat that has been loose in the news station. A rat that apparently many members of the news crew have become affectionate towards, apart from Dave because he's new. And they decide to have a rat funeral.
That's a good compromise, I suppose.
Apparently NBC were not very happy about it. They're like, we're trying to do something here and you've given us rat funeral.
I really hope they found out on the night as well. That just would have been so sweet.
Hey, what are you guys doing?
Taking 30 seconds away from work to deal with our grief. You can dock our pay if you see fit.
No. Bill, I'd actually like to join you, if that's all right with everyone.
Whatever. All right, does anyone have anything they would like to say before we do this?
Dave, nothing?
I guess we're all here to say goodbye to Mike the Rat, who we'll all miss, I imagine. And, and I didn't have much time to think of anything.
Okay,
come
whatever,
on.
Whatever. Bill, could you say a few words?
Kind of putting me on the
just
spot.
Just a few words, Bill.
Okay, Mike was a rat. This cannot be denied. But the flame of life, which burns inside all of us, glows no less brightly when it is the flicker of one tiny candle. None can deny that his departure has left this world just a tiny bit darker.
Yes.
And a tiny bit colder. That's all I have.
Amen.
Amen.
They were also, apparently the cast were banned from the SAG Awards after one appearance because of their bad behavior. They took off their shoes, they stole wine from other tables, and unfortunately, this one's not so juvenile and fun. This is Andy Dick asked for Helen Hunt's autograph on his penis.
Wow.
You're trying to keep it clean.
No, that's fine. That's something. I was wondering, actually, because I have heard that Andy Dick has that kind of reputation for being quite vulgar and unpredictable. So, yeah, I was wondering if there was any exploits or anything behind the scenes with him. I assume there probably was.
You know, it's funny enough, you never hear it. So I've got the complete set now on DVD, which has really nice commentaries with it. And,
oh, cool. Okay.
Everyone is very complimentary about the cast, and you don't really hear anything much about them complaining about Andy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might be that thing of when you're working together on a show like this, you do become a bit of a family. And you sort of get used to Andy and you figure out like what his tics are. And I think this is probably best shown in the season after Phil Hartman passes away. John Lovitz joins the cast as sort of a replacement character called Max Lewis. And season five is not the best season of News Radio. And you do feel the spirit of Phil Hartman is missing from the show. Jerry Seinfeld guests on one episode and calls Bill McNeil Phil because he's just so into that character. Andy Dick apparently was very rude to John Lovitz during his time on the show because he's an outsider, I guess, and and he just didn't like that. But everyone else said that Lovitz was fantastic, stepping into a tough role.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, actually, to be fair, it's not an easy, not an easy pair of shoes to fill, is it? Mm. And John Lovitz, for anyone who knows, he's just one of those actors that he's in everything, comedically speaking.
And I don't like good. It. I love it.
I think of The Wedding Singer.
Mm.
He's losing his mind, and I'm reaping the benefits.
That's
always in my head.
He's a regular on The Simpsons as well.
He is, yeah.
Playing all sorts of different characters, though. I always love him as Jay Sherman, as the film critic.
Yes, yeah. It stinks, yeah. we could do this all day, but yeah, he's absolutely one of those guys. So fair play to him for trying. And talk about the Andy Dick character, like the slapstick side of it. It's something I wanted to talk a little bit about. And it perked my ears up when you talked about it just a minute ago. And that was something I noticed actually again in the clips and the trailers, was there's a lot of crazy slapstick and stunts going on. And it's something that we've talked about in quite a few of these episodes already, and I know it will come up in other topics and other shows that we're going to talk about, is the use of physical comedy in sitcoms, you know. And I feel like it's something that you see in all of them, but I don't know if every show necessarily gets it right, if that makes any sense. Like I think it's weirdly harder to do a pratfall and make it funny than most people would think.
100%. It's I think it takes a great deal of skill to be a physical comedian. Because watching someone fall in general isn't a funny thing unless you're deep into Schadenfreude like myself. There's a certain art to clowning. There is. As silly as it might sound to say. Mm. And I mean, there is something wonderful about just Andy Dick's shape. He's quite tall and really skinny, and he has that nasally voice, and everything about him lends itself to this character, this sort of dweebish, accidental prone character. There's a wonderful episode where James Caan guest stars as himself.
Oh, wow.
Okay. He's playing himself as an actor who has come to the station to study Phil Hartman's character, because he's playing a radio news anchor in a film, blah blah blah.
Right.
Bill is completely like, let me tell you about my childhood and my trauma. And he's like, don't care about any of that. Just want to know the nuts and bolts of what you do in this job. but then he starts noticing Andy Dick around the office. And he's like, this is the strangest man I've ever seen. I'm fascinated by his process. You cut to him and it's just Andy with floss in his teeth, with with the plastic casing still attached to the floss, and he can't get the plastic casing off. He starts cutting it with scissors and getting tangled in it. And again, it would just look stupid, I think, for so many people doing it, but for somehow Andy Dick is able to elevate it to a sort of high art.
That's good. I like that.
it's really good. And the whole rest of the episode is James Caan trying to get time with Andy Dick, much to Phil Hartman's annoyance.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That sounds like a great use of a guest star as well, to be fair.
They thought
something funny for him to do.
They did that quite well. Like the guest stars they had, I mean, they have people who we would consider guest stars now, but back then it was probably just jobbing comedians like Bob Odenkirk and Norm Macdonald and stuff like that popping up as Jimmy James's lawyers. David Cross popping up as one of Dave's old barbershop quartet buddies. Right. Again, in one episode, they all come in and they're like, we made a deal. If one of us doesn't have a job by a certain point, we're going to go back on the road as a barbershop quartet. And Dave is just like, I don't want to do this.
This sounds incredible.
It's really fun. But yeah, the guest stars, the sort of the name guest stars of the time were people like James Caan and Jerry Seinfeld, who were playing themselves, just sort of heightened versions of themselves. I think the only one like I can think is who would have been like a proper guest star at the time who was playing character was B.B. Newworth from Cheers and Frasier comes in as playing sort of a rival to the Beth character, which is is very fun because B.B. Newworth is fantastic at everything she does.
Yeah, she absolutely is. Wow, that's really, really cool. And I like the sound of that, Matt. And do you know what? It's funny. I'm just having a quick skim through some of the writers as well, because just of what you're describing, it just sounds like a mashup of all these different shows. And just looking at a couple of the top writers and some of the other stuff they've been on, like Frasier, How I Met Your Mother, The Simpsons is in here, Tonight Show. I'm seeing all sorts of other stuff. Yeah, just crazy, crazy. And it kind of makes sense, actually, looking at these guys. You're thinking, right, so this is clearly the style of comedy that they were going for at the time. So it sounds like a real hidden gem, more we talk about it, actually.
If you look at Paul Simms, who created the show, he started off working on the Larry Sanders Show, which is another one of my all-time favorite sitcoms. Then moves on to producing Flight of the Conchords, Girls, Bored to Death, Atlanta, What We Do in the Shadows. You know, he's doing pretty all right for himself in the world of comedy now.
He is.
I think he's actually quite big on What We Do in the Shadows. He's the name I always notice popping up in the credits when I'm watching it. Right. I'm just like, oh yeah, Paul Simms from News Radio, amazing. He even wrote an episode of Boardwalk Empire. Wild.
Yeah, that is. But it's really interesting to see the different flavors of comedy that are going into this. Coming back to something you said a minute ago, and I'd love to know a bit more, is, like you said, the whole relationship, because we've noticed in doing this discussion about each show that there's always a kind of central romance in a sitcom that will usually kind of drive the plot forward in some form or another. And then there's a couple of ancillary couples that will kind of be around the edges a bit. And like you said, the will-they-won't-they thing was and still is, to a degree, played upon a lot in shows. But I'm interested to know that this show doesn't do that then. So it just kind of cuts to the chase. And it's like, these guys like each other. They're going to be around each other. It might not be the most stable relationship throughout, but, you know, you know where they stand. So there's no kind of mystery there.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it becomes a running joke in the show that they get together and break up, and they're always worried about what other people in the office will think, and everybody in the office is just so bored by it. Like, oh, you're back together? We don't care. Right. It happens all the time. It was very much not part of the show's DNA to have that sort of... I think... A lot of sitcoms of the 90s got into a heartwarming nature. I think Seinfeld kind of proved that you didn't have to do that. And I think they very much take that approach. It's, you do love these characters, but you never want them to follow their hopes and dreams. You just kind of want to see them bumming around this news station. You don't, there's no real growth for them. And you're not yearning for it. You're just happy to spend the time with them. It's why I don't think you could do a News Radio reunion, be very sad because again, you'd just be thinking about Phil Hartman the whole time. But you could do it in the sense that, these characters are probably still there and still doing the same usual routines. And I think part of the genius of the show is finding ways to make that stuff funny over and over again.
Yeah, you're right. It's something that, again, I've come up with on a few other shows that we've talked about, and that you're absolutely spot on. I think that's kind of the two camps you get when it comes to sitcoms. You either get ones that will tell an overarching story and characters naturally progress as they go through different life stages. And then you get the ones where it's kind of, like you said, like Seinfeld, for instance, I learned. And Always Sunny is another example that comes to my mind of shows where it's like, it's just the status quo, or maybe a little bit less in some cases. Like, the characters don't really grow or learn a lot, but that's okay. Like you said, you're not really watching it because you want to see character growth or a big story. You're just kind of looking for these weird hijinks that they get themselves involved with. And I think either is fine, personally. It depends on the show, the setup, the characters. And like you said, from what you've described here, I can see why they would just stick with that. You know, it's in the one setting. It sounds like there's a lot of stories and stuff they can mine for comedy, so they don't need to worry too much about giving a big character growth to all of these people. It's like, no, let's just put them in wacky situations and just enjoy the fun of that.
Exactly. And I think that's why your sort of like space episode and Titanic episode come in your season 3 and 4, because they're like, oh, well, you know, we don't have anything for them normally this week. But what if they were in space?
WNYX News Time, 1247, Mark 5-9. Tragedy struck today in Sector 9 as rebel terrorists blew up the Death Star, killing thousands. The Rebel Alliance, a fringe group of anti-Empire fanatics, has claimed responsibility for the terrorist act. Fortunately, Lord Vader escaped without harm. Our hearts go out to the families of the victims.
The more I think about it, I think this show also probably paves the way a little bit for 30 Rock, in that there is a similar sort of sense of that is a show, a workplace sitcom based around a crew putting together a show each week. The crew is very wacky, and yet the difference is you actually do follow the lives and growth of people on 30 Rock.
That's true.
So it's almost like this was like a nice jumping off point for that.
I could see that working. That's a show I hope to cover actually on this series. I mean, I've still got a few episodes left to fill, but that's one of my personal favorites. Absolutely right. I could see this being almost like a sort of prequel to it in a way.
I mean, like, you look at Andy Dick in this, and you look at Jack McBrayer in 30 Rock, and it's not too far off.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true. I could see that already. I wonder who the Joe Rogan character is in 30 Rock, but let's not get into that.
Frank.
Probably Frank, yeah.
Though if Joe Rogan's watching it, he probably thinks it's Jack Donaghy.
He'd love that, wouldn't he? Yeah. No, Jack is obviously Jimmy James. That's very clear.
Yes, it's very clear. What a show 30 Rock is. But no, we're talking about News Radio, which is a show I love.
Tangents are fine. Tangents are fine, yeah.
I will say, like many shows from the 90s, there are things in it that I watch today and I'm not so keen on. There is a liberal use of a word beginning with S to describe people who don't function properly. It's a regularly used word in the show, and it's really upsetting when you look at it now. But for the most part, I do think it plays it fairly liberal and fairly smartly. I like I said that scene where Catherine pictures her dream is having lunch with a multi-ethnic crew is actually pretty forward thinking for the time. It's calling itself out, and it's not great that this show only has one black character who then quits in the fourth season.
Yeah.
You know, it's got one, and it draws attention to the fact that she is the only one. She references that she is the struggle she has as a black woman on the show.
Really?
And, you know, I don't think any other NBC shows I can think of did the same thing. Like, Friends doesn't do it, Seinfeld doesn't do it.
I think you're right there. It's interesting because, again, both of those shows have been covered, and it is something we talked about, actually. Both my guests, Daisy and Petros, respectively, said similar things of, like, you do have to kind of watch these shows almost through that lens of the 90s of kind of American primetime telly. Yeah. And unfortunately, yeah, like you said, representation across any show, or most shows, really, in that era.
Still today.
Suffer from that. Oh, yeah, even today, let's be honest. But yeah, it was definitely more of an issue there. But I like that they kind of hang a lantern on it a little bit. Mm. And it makes me wonder about a lot of these shows, about, you know, not to have a go at NBC, but as a network, you could presume from that then perhaps some of the people involved in the network, or people, because these kind of shows, it'll be a lot of the same people behind the scenes, you know, crossing over. Perhaps, you know, they weren't really thinking about it when they were setting these shows up, so that might be part of the reason why, unfortunately, a lot of these shows, as you say, are kind of bare bones when it comes to representation.
Well,
could be part of it.
If you are interested in this era of television, like I greatly am, I highly recommend the book Top of the Rock by Warren Littlefield, who was the president of NBC at the time. It's essentially a sort of oral history of his time as president during the rise of must-see television. And it's a really interesting look into studio politics back at that time. I don't think it delves deep enough into sort of some of the issues that we'd like it to. It talks about stuff like the rise of Will and Grace and the more acceptable portrayals of homosexuality on television. And the difficulties they had with all of that, and the creation of Friends. I believe News Radio is referenced, and stuff like Third Rock from the Sun. It's a really interesting read. Strongly recommend it.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you for that recommendation. I'll see if I can find it and see if I can chuck a link in the show notes, because I'm sure someone listening, you might also be interested. Because, yeah, I do wonder how much that plays into what's become a recurring theme by this point. You know, you can always see the pattern. I mean, thankfully, I can say is for the most part, for a lot of shows now, you know, some of the more modern stuff we talk about, thankfully, they've seemed to at least give it some consideration, which is great. But yeah, still interesting. Interesting. I'm glad, again, they do at least address it in some form. Whereas that's better than nothing, you know, if you had to choose.
I mean,
to a degree.
Yes. There's, I mean, at the end of the day, it was a tough time. I mean, there's obviously as well, like in the 90s, gay panic humor was obviously a big thing, and and that exists within the show as well, unfortunately.
It is always interesting to me, again, just looking back on shows, and like you said, some jokes and punchlines, some words even from what you were describing a moment ago. That we think, oh, wouldn't do that now. You know, and that's kind of the way I look at it. I try not to look at it as like, this is offensive and get it off my... It's like, it's happened, it's done.
Yes.
It's been written, it's been recorded. And I was saying this while I was talking to Daisy, actually, about Friends, is that... And again, Petros with Seinfeld, is that I personally believe that I don't see the good in getting overly offended by a joke that, even if it is offensive... Even if, like you said, they're using terminology which is offensive and is, you know, they shouldn't have used. I don't know. Is it going to do you much good getting angry about it when, like you said, it could have been that was just the era. Doesn't make it right.
No.
It was a word that
was common practice back then.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Even when I was growing up, people used to throw it around all the time.
Exactly.
Like it was nothing. And like you said, now you think twice and you go, actually, that's going to upset somebody. You learn from it.
You do. It is that casualty of watching anything from the past. And it's, you know, things we watch now will be looked at in a similar way many years from now. I've recently been rewatching Modern Family. Okay. And I'm actually a little bit shocked at some of the stuff that happens on that show.
Oh, really?
I have a problem with that show. I like the show. I think it's very fun. Mm. I have a problem with the Mitch and Cam characters, and that I think they're gay in name. I don't... Well, they are gay characters, but I feel like they've just put them together as gay characters without actually having a romance between the two of them.
Oh, and okay.
And then the Gloria character, I'm just like, oh, there's a lot of racial stereotypes going on here.
it's true. I guess that's that thing, isn't it, with comedy. Again, it's, you know, it what is perhaps to someone a fun play on a trope or something, others might consider offensive.
And it's 100%. Yeah. And it will change, and people's views will change over time. And like, that's a show that's only about 10, 11 years old, and I'm watching it now, and I already have issues with it. And the same thing will happen with, I don't know what's a show that's on at the moment that people like. I don't watch enough TV of the modern era. You know, people will be watching Be Positive on CBS Now, and they'll be like, oh, you can't show dialysis machines like that on today's television. Like, things will change. Yeah. And we can't ignore that these things happened, because it's part of our history.
Yeah.
But we can use it to build a better future.
Yeah. And it sounds like, again, you can still enjoy the shows, broadly speaking. You can still look for all of the gems that are there. All of the stuff that is good, that is funny. And yeah, if there's one or two bits you maybe think, well, I'm not so keen on that. You know, it's probably going to be fleeting, you know, best case scenario. So, I don't know. I mean, again, like, for me personally, the way you've described the show as a whole, I think it's definitely one I would go and check out. And yeah, just look for the good in it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that. There's, at least in those first four seasons.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine, because again, something else that's a recurring point on the show is some comedies sadly do kind of peter off.
Yeah.
And as you said, really the passing of one of the core members is, in this case, completely unavoidable. But that's usually something that puts a bit of a nail in the coffin for a lot of sitcoms, is when you've got this chemistry with all the main cast, and as soon as one of them goes for any reason, that's usually when the wheels start to come off a bit. Because I don't know about you, I feel like it doesn't matter how good your writing is and how sort of solid the premise is, it's the chemistry of the cast and the characters that really holds a sitcom together, that makes it
100%.
Work. So as soon as you lose that rhythm, unfortunately, that's usually when things start to come apart.
Look at something like Arrested Development, where you have three seasons of perfect television, and you come back for the fourth season, all those characters are split up on different ends of the show. Yeah. They've all got their own individual plot lines, and it just doesn't feel like the same show anymore, because it's and you know, yeah, I think it's impossible for a sitcom to have a sort of perfect run. I can't think of any that do.
True.
I think everything kind of drops off. Like, and for me, like, two of the best are like Arrested Development, which drops off in its fourth and fifth season, and The Simpsons, which drops off about 20 seasons late, you know, like 20 seasons later of a show that I can't, I'm trying to make my way through it all on Disney Plus. It's interesting to see how quickly I was devouring it early on and then slowing down.
I was with you there, mate. Myself and my wife started that, and she works from home as an artist, so she can watch more telly than me. And yeah, I find myself losing the desire to go back and catch up. I was kind of like, where are you now? Oh, season 15. Yeah, I'll watch this episode with dinner, and you know, and it's kind of like, yeah, this is okay. But you're right, that kind of early stuff, particularly kind of 2 to 10, I'd say, arguably, is like where a lot of the really good stuff is. And it just kind of
some of the best comedy on television.
Yeah, but that again, that happens, and there's other shows I know that will come up on here. There's some we've already talked about that unfortunately that happens. So yeah, maybe in this case it's probably for the best that it ran its course with the five seasons.
And I'm saying that I'm just looking at the episode guide now, and I'm saying like season 5 isn't so good, but there's an episode called Flowers for Matthew, which does the sort of Flowers for Algernon story in which Joe makes a drink that makes Matthew smart, but it can't last forever. And the thing that just makes me amuses me constantly in that episode is instead of referring to him as Matthew, they start calling him Smaffew, as in smart Matthew. And it's so dumb, but so funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it is one of those crazy plots that news radio works so well.
Sounds brilliant, man. And that leads me on to another question for you. Do you sort of have a favourite season, I guess?
I think... Probably season 2 is around when it's at its best.
Right.
It's where they've written, like, the first season is only 7 episodes long, but I think they quickly found a groove.
Good.
And then season 2 is playing on all those characters really nicely. That's the episode, that's the season with Rat Funeral, which I do think is a great episode. There's an episode with Bill's autobiography where he's been offered a chance to write his autobiography and then realizes that like he hasn't done anything in his life worth writing down.
Oh wow.
And he has this sort of mental collapse over it, and everyone's trying to encourage him, and he keeps telling these awful stories from his life. It's very fun. There's a great episode. I can't remember what season it is, but it's a Christmas episode, and Mr. James has got gifts for everyone in the office, and they're all terrible. So he decides to make it better by going out and getting everyone better gifts, and he gets everyone cars, apart from Matthew,
right.
Who he gives tapes of this old radio comedy show called Fibber McGee and Molly, which I always thought was a creation for the show until I was in Hollywood and walking down the sort of the star walk, all the Hollywood stars on the floor, and I came across the Fibber McGee and Molly star. And I was like, oh my god, it's a real show.
Wow.
It's just this really weird old radio reference in there.
That's amazing.
Everybody's really upset because Matthew's not got a good present, and he doesn't seem upset, and he thinks it's just because he keeps these tapes and everyone's going to have to give their cars back, and he realizes that it all turns out all right in the end. It is a sitcom, but like, it is just like this really, there's a lot of fun to be had with Matthew and his sort of simple nature and trusting nature. And there's great interplay throughout the series between Matthew and Bill, because Bill clearly has just lowest amount of respect for Matthew possible. Mm. And Matthew thinks that Bill and him are the best of friends. And it just leads to, you know, heartbreakingly funny comedy.
That sounds great. I mean, I think you need that as well. You need a couple of characters that have good interplay, and it's that kind of thing where you can put different characters with each other in different pairings. I always find, again, we've talked about some other shows, like I think a smart writing team knows how to do that well. Like, you pair off these different personalities, and you usually get some pretty good stuff out of it.
I think that's a wonderful thing to say about the cast as well, is like any pairing of them leads to different dynamics, and it always works out for the best, really.
Mm. That sounds wonderful, man. I mean, the more you've talked about this has given me flashbacks to the Seinfeld chat I did not that long ago at the time of recording. And it's like, my pile of comedies that I need to watch is just going to be very, very long. And even rewatch, you know, in some of these cases.
100%. I mean, as I just said, I was just rewatching Modern Family, and I rewatched Seinfeld not too long ago. And I can always sit down with a lot of these styles of shows. They're very easy to watch, but very fun at the same time. Not to take away from them to say that they're easy to watch, but I'm much more likely to sit down and watch Parks and Rec than I am The Wire. as much as I love The Wire.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's the mindset, isn't it? You know, this is something we've talked about a lot, is a lot of these comedies are 20-minute episodes, nice and breezy, you know. Whereas
you
go on.
You know what's going to happen. Yeah. You're in safe hands.
It's comforting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. Well, so,
if I can say one negative about the show.
Okay, yeah.
And it's a negative acknowledged by the creators as well.
Okay.
The theme song is dreadful.
Is that right?
On one of the commentaries, I think Paul Sims says, like, this is truly one of the worst theme songs ever committed to film. It is just a sort of series of notes, just boom, boom, boom.
That's going to make my life harder, because I usually use theme songs to sort of open the show with.
You'll love it. You'll love it. And you know what? Like, everybody will listen to this, and then they'll get to this point, and they're like, I get it.
Yeah. Is it at least mercifully short?
Oh, yeah. It's like 30 seconds long.
Brilliant. Okay, that's fine. I can work with that. No problem.
I think I found somewhere, I think one of the writers like wrote fake lyrics for it. Just like, one day in town, a spaceship landed. Out of the ship comes Dave Nelson. It's just like, it's just this very strange, surreal lyrics to this bad theme song. It's great. If you do enjoy the show and pick up the DVD sets, I highly recommend the commentaries. They're good fun. The cast and crew come back for them, and there's real nice insight. You can tell that there was a lot of love put into this show.
Yeah, on that note, actually, where can we find it? Because I did a quick skim. I didn't see it on any streaming services as of yet.
So I think the only streaming service, that's something we didn't talk about at all, is in the UK. I mean, this was never on terrestrial television in the UK.
No.
It only played on the Sony television channel, which I'm not even sure exists anymore, but I remember I had a job interview there once, and I went in and they were asking me, what do you think of our channel? I was like, you know what, I love news radio. And they're like, oh yeah, nobody watched that. I was like,
I'll wait to hear back from you then. Yeah.
Did not get that job.
Probably for the best. It's all good.
Yes. As I say, I don't think the channel exists anymore. As far as I know, in the UK, the first two seasons are available on iTunes.
Okay.
To purchase. And they're usually pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can purchase the Region 1 DVD sets, which is what I did. Which actually is region free, it turns out, when I got it over here, playing it on, and that usually retails at about £30 plus delivery. So that's all 97 episodes.
That's pretty reasonable, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's, if you're looking for a show you haven't seen before and something a little different, it also has, to go along with its theme song, has some of the worst DVD packaging imaginable. So, you know, be prepared for that.
Brilliant. Oh, that's wonderful. I just want to know, is there anything else you sort of want to talk about with the show, or anything that kind of is, I don't know, leaps out to your mind?
I mean, nothing too much. I mean, I did think a little bit when we were talking about the romance angle. In season 5, they do introduce a romantic rival for Dave, for Lisa's affection, Johnny Johnson, played by Patrick Warburton. Which is not the strongest sort of plot line. And I think it shows that they were probably at that point, now that they'd lost Phil Hartman and probably some of their cultural cachet, they were probably trying to reach out to maybe a bit of more of a mainstream audience. I suddenly noticed that I thought my thing wasn't recording, but it is. It's okay. But other than that, I think what I just like to say is that it is this sort of terrific ensemble sitcom filled with fantastic comedians and a great writing team. And it, like, if you can search it out, I really recommend it. I believe that for a while a few episodes were up on YouTube. I'm not sure if they still are.
If you
want to be sneaky. But yeah, I think it's a treat, and it's a great slice of that 90s sitcom world.
Brilliant. Well, again, thank you so much, Jack, for bringing it to me and to obviously the listeners. It's I've really intrigued by this, and I think that the more I look into it, it's definitely what I'm going to try and hunt down in some form or another. But
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But I'd love to know, really, I guess, to take us home, where can the good people find you?
I'm wandering the streets. No.
That's hilarity. Yeah.
Hilarity. No, not at all. I am on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Letterboxd under the name @JFG in digital 3D.
Okay.
It's a terrible handle, but it's mine. It is my own version of the News Radio theme song. And you can listen to my strongly held opinions on Adam Sandler movies over at the Truly Happily Madison podcast that I host with my friend Josh Pappenheim. We're going through every film produced by the Happy Madison production company from 1999 to current day, and we're in the hellscape of Jack and Jill, Bucky Larson Born to Be a Star, and Grown-Ups at the moment. So it's a real fun discussion.
Oh, my heart goes out to you. Yeah,
it's all right.
Fair play. Again, I think it's a fun thing. We're talking about this, obviously, prior to this, prior to us recording, that is. And I think it's a good idea for a show because there's so much variety in there. And just as we're talking now, I'm just going to make sure I am subscribed. Because I love to recommend things to people, and listening to this, I'm being genuine. There we go, followed. And I'll be downloading. Oh, you've got Jack and Jill. I'll be downloading that and listen to it later. Fair play to you.
It's a fun episode.
Well, previous guests, Claire and Daisy, did it for their show, W Rated, because it is on IMDb's bottom 100, and I can understand why. So fair play to you for doing that.
I'll tell you what. Not the worst film we've covered.
I was going to say.
Plenty worse films than that.
I know.
There's always something to talk about. Oh, yeah, there's some great stuff in there. We have a 2.5-hour episode on Funny People that might be longer than Funny People actually is, and that's a long movie. But I love that movie, and I go on about it ad nauseum on that episode. So.
Good. Well, I have plenty of recommendations. I'll be putting all of those links in the show notes for people to go and find you. So thanks for coming on, Jack.
And thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And there we have it. Thank you so much to Jack for coming onto the show and sharing with me News Radio. I had an absolute blast doing this show and learned so much. And if you guys listening really enjoyed the podcast and you want to know more about News Radio, go and check out the show. You can find box sets out there online. I think it's well worth getting into. And as well, if you want to hear more from Jack, definitely go and check out his podcast, the Truly Happily Madison podcast. It's a great show. I've put links in all the show notes for you to go and find it. A huge thank you, as always, to Alex Jenkins, who designs the artwork for the show. If you want to know more about his work or commission him for your own logo and designs, go and check out his details in the show notes. I've put them in there for you as well. If you are enjoying the podcast, then make sure you reach out to me and let me know. You can do so via three main ways. It's Twitter, Instagram, and email. All of the details are in the show notes for you. And of course, you're always welcome to leave me a lovely 5-star review. If you do, that would not only make my day, but would of course earn you a shout out. So if you do that, definitely reach out to me and let me know, because I just want to share my gratitude for you. And speaking of gratitude, well, as I said in the last episode, we are coming up to a year of Fundamentals. At the time of this going out, we're now past that. And I just again want to say a huge thank you to every single one of you who's been listening, who's subscribed, who's told a friend, It all means so much, and I hope that we can continue to do this show. We can continue to learn as much as possible about the world of pop culture. And of course, that still means I'm open to guests and ideas. So if you are listening and you fancy coming onto the show for any number of topics, then hit me up in the details below. I would love to hear from you. That's it from me. I'll be back again next week with another sitcom as we continue our sitcom summer series. And I'll leave a little clip at the end here as a clue for you as to what is coming up next. So until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.
Really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, sure.
And 3, 2, 1. Troy and Abed in the morning, and we're back. Look who's here, Jeff Winger. Jeff, how do you stay so fit?
Diet, exercise, genetics.
Sure. Okay, so it seems as though we have a clip. You want to set it up for us?
I'd like to, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, we'll just roll it.
Ooh, my name's Jeff Winger. Ooh.
Hey, I'm Jeff Winger. I'm so tall.
This watch is expensive.
Muscles are everywhere.
Oh, that was really funny. Guys, what's going on? Where are the cameras?
Oh, we're not filming this. Now, who'd want to watch this?
Oh, guys, it's 6 a.m. Jeez.
We're not going to have him back.
Troy and Abed in the...
No!